Chapter 138. Containing the further progress of the plot contrived by Mr. Ralph Nickleby and Mr. Arthur Gride, with that settled resolution and steadiness of purpose to which extreme circumstances so often give birth, acting upon far less excitable and more sluggish temperaments than that which was the lot of Madeline Bray's admirer, Nicholas started, at dawn of day, from the restless couch which no sleep had visited on the previous night, and prepared to make that last appeal, by whose slight and fragile thread her only remaining hope of escape depended. Although, to restless and ardent minds, morning may be the fitting season for exertion and activity, it is not always at that time that hope is strongest, or the spirit most sanguine and buoyant. In trying and doubtful positions, youth, custom, a steady contemplation of the difficulties which surround us, and a familiarity with them, imperceptibly diminish our apprehensions and beget comparative indifference, if not a vague and reckless confidence in some relief, the means or nature of which we care not to foresee. But when we come, fresh, upon such things in the morning, with that dark and silent gap between us and yesterday, with every link in the brittle chain of hope, to rivet afresh, our hot enthusiasm subdued, and cool calm reason substituted in its stead, doubt and misgiving revive. As the traveler sees farthest by day, and becomes aware of rugged mountains, and trackless plains which the friendly darkness had shrouded from his sight and mind together, so, the wayfarer in the toilsome path of human life sees, with each returning sun, some new obstacle to surmount, some new height to be attained. Distances stretch out before him which, last night, were scarcely taken into account, and the light which gilds all nature with its cheerful beams, seems but to shine upon the weary obstacles that yet lie strewn between him and the grave. So thought Nicholas, when, with the impatience natural to a situation like his, he softly left the house, and, feeling as though to remain in bed were to lose most precious time, and to be up and stirring were in some way, to promote the end he had in view, wandered into London, perfectly well knowing that for hours to come he could not obtain speech with Madeline, and could do nothing but wish the intervening time away. And, even now, as he paced the streets, and listlessly looked round on the gradually increasing bustle and preparation for the day, everything appeared to yield him some new occasion for despondency. Last night, the sacrifice of a young, affectionate, and beautiful creature, to such a wretch, and in such a cause, had seemed a thing too monstrous to succeed. And the warmer he grew, the more confident he felt that some interposition must save her from his clutches. But now, when he thought how regularly things went on, from day to day, in the same unvarying round, how youth and beauty died, and ugly griping age lived tottering on, how crafty avarice grew rich, and manly honest hearts were poor and sad, how few they were who tenanted the stately houses, and how many of those who lay in noisome pens, or rose each day, and laid them down each night, and lived and died, father and son, mother and child, race upon race, and generation upon generation, without a home to shelter them, or the energies of one single man directed to their aid. How, in seeking, not a luxurious and splendid life, but the bare means of a most wretched and inadequate subsistence, there were women and children in that one town, divided in two classes, numbered and estimated as regularly as the noble families and folks of great degree, and reared from infancy, to drive most criminal and dreadful trades. How ignorance was punished and never taught, how jail doors gaped, and gallows loomed, for thousands urged towards them by circumstances darkly curtaining their very cradles' heads, and but for which they might have earned their honest bread and lived in peace. How many died in soul, and had no chance of life. How many who could scarcely go astray, be they vicious as they would, turned haughtily from the crushed and stricken wretch who could scarce do otherwise, and who would have been a greater wonder had he or she done well, than even they had they done ill. How much injustice, misery, and wrong there was, and yet how the world rolled on, from year to year, alike careless and indifferent, and no man seeking to remedy or address it. When he thought of all this, and selected from the mass the one slight case on which his thoughts were bent, he felt, indeed, that there was little ground for hope, and little reason why it should not form an atom in the huge aggregate of distress and sorrow, and add one small and unimportant unit, to swell the great amount. But youth is not prone to contemplate the darkest side of a picture it can shift at will. By dint of reflecting on what he had to do, and reviving the train of thought which night had interrupted, Nicholas gradually summoned up his utmost energy, and when the morning was sufficiently advanced for his purpose, had no thought but that of using it to the best advantage. A hasty breakfast taken, and such affairs of business as required prompt attention disposed of, he directed his steps to the residence of Madeline Bray, whither he lost no time in arriving. It had occurred to him that, very possibly, the young lady might be denied, although to him she never had been, and he was still pondering upon the surest method of obtaining access to her in that case, when, coming to the door of the house, he found it had been left ajar, probably by the last person who had gone out. The occasion was not one upon which to observe the nicest ceremony. Therefore, availing himself of this advantage, Nicholas walked gently upstairs, and knocked at the door of the room into which he had been accustomed to be shown. Receiving permission to enter from some person on the other side, he opened the door and walked in. Bray and his daughter were sitting there alone. It was nearly 3 weeks since he had seen her last, but there was a change in the lovely girl before him which told Nicholas, in startling terms, how much mental suffering had been compressed into that short time. There are no words which can express, nothing with which can be compared, the perfect pallor, the clear transparent whiteness, of the beautiful face which turned towards him when he entered. Her hair was a rich deep brown, but shading that face, and straying upon the neck, that rivaled it in whiteness, it seemed by the strong contrast raven black. Something of wildness and restlessness there was in the dark eye, but there was the same patient look, the same expression of gentle mournfulness which he well remembered, and no trace of a single tear. Most beautiful, more beautiful, perhaps, than ever, there was something in her face which quite unmanned him, and appeared far more touching than the wildest agony of grief. It was not merely calm and composed, but fixed and rigid, as though the violent effort which had summoned that composure beneath her father's eye, while it mastered all other thoughts, had prevented even the momentary expression they had communicated to the features from subsiding, and had fastened it there, as an evidence of its triumph. The father sat opposite to her, not looking directly in her face, but glancing at her, as he talked with a gay air which ill disguised the anxiety of his thoughts. The drawing materials were not on their accustomed table, nor were any of the other tokens of her usual occupations to be seen. The little vases which Nicholas had always seen filled with fresh flowers were empty, or supplied only with a few withered stalks and leaves. The bird was silent. The cloth that covered his cage at night was not removed. His mistress had forgotten him. There are times when, the mind being painfully alive to receive impressions, a great deal may be noted at a glance. This was one, for Nicholas had but glanced round him when he was recognized by Mr. Bray, who said impatiently, "Now, sir, what do you want? Name your errand here, quickly, if you please, for my daughter and I are busily engaged with other, and more important matters than those you come about. Come, sir, address yourself to your business at once." Apostrophe, Nicholas could very well discern that the irritability and impatience of this speech were assumed, and that Bray, in his heart, was rejoiced at any interruption which promised to engage the attention of his daughter. He bent his eyes involuntarily upon the father as he spoke, and marked his uneasiness, for he colored and turned his head away. The device, however, so far as it was a device for causing Madeline to interfere, was successful. She rose, and advancing towards Nicholas paused halfway, and stretched out her hand as expecting a letter. Maidline, apostrophe said her father impatiently, my love, what are you doing? Apostrophe apostrophe, Miss Bray expects an enclosure perhaps, apostrophe said Nicholas, speaking very distinctly, and with an emphasis she could scarcely misunderstand. My employer is absent from England, or I should have brought a letter with me. I hope she will give me time a little time. I ask a very little time. Apostrophe, if that is all you come about, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Bray, you may make yourself easy on that head. Maidline, my dear, I didn't know this person was in your debt. Apostrophe apostrophe, a trifle, I believe, apostrophe returned Maidline, faintly. I suppose you think now, apostrophe said Bray, wheeling his chair around and confronting Nicholas, that, but for such pitiful sums as you bring here, because my daughter has chosen to employ her time as she has, we should starve? Apostrophe apostrophe, I have not thought about it, apostrophe returned Nicholas. You have not thought about it? Apostrophe apostrophe sneered the invalid. You know you have thought about it, and have thought that, and think so every time you come here. Do you suppose, young man, that I don't know what little purse-proud tradesmen are, when, through some fortunate circumstances, they get the upper hand for a brief day, or think they get the upper hand of a gentleman? Apostrophe apostrophe, my business, apostrophe said Nicholas respectfully, is with a lady. Apostrophe, with a gentleman's daughter, sir, apostrophe returned the sick man, and the pettifogging spirit is the same. But perhaps you bring orders, eh? Have you any fresh orders for my daughter, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe, Nicholas understood the tone of triumph in which this interrogatory was put, but remembering the necessity of supporting his assumed character, produced a scrap of paper purporting to contain a list of some subjects for drawings which his employer desired to have executed, and with which he had prepared himself in case of any such contingency. Oh! Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Bray. These are the orders, are they? Apostrophe, since you insist upon the term, sir, yes, apostrophe replied Nicholas. Then you may tell your master, apostrophe said Bray, tossing the paper back again, with an exulting smile, that my daughter, Miss Maidline Bray, condescends to employ herself no longer in such labors as these, that she is not at his beck and call, as he supposes her to be, that we don't live upon his money, as he flatters himself we do, that he may give whatever he owes us to the first beggar that passes his shop, or add it to his own profits next time he calculates them, and that he may go to the devil for me. That's my acknowledgement of his orders, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe, and this is the independence of a man who sells his daughter as he has sold that weeping girl. Apostrophe apostrophe thought Nicholas. The father was too much absorbed with his own exultation to mark the look of scorn which, for an instant, Nicholas could not have suppressed had he been upon the rack. There, apostrophe he continued, after a short silence, you have your message, and can retire, unless you have any further orders. Apostrophe, I have none, apostrophe said Nicholas. Nor, in the consideration of the station you once held, have I used that or any other word which, however harmless in itself, could be supposed to imply authority on my part or dependence on yours. I have no orders, but I have fears, that I will express, chafe as you may fears, that you may be consigning that young lady to something worse than supporting you by the labor of her hands, had she worked herself dead. These are my fears, and these fears I found upon your own demeanor. Your conscience will tell you, sir, whether I construe it well or not. Apostrophe, for heaven's sake. Apostrophe apostrophe cried Maidline, interposing an alarm between them. Remember, sir, he is ill. Apostrophe, ill. Apostrophe apostrophe cried the invalid, gasping and catching for breath. Ill, ill. I am bearded and bullied by a shop boy, and she beseeches him to pity me, and remember I am ill. apostrophe apostrophe, he fell into a paroxysm of his disorder, so violent that for a few moments Nicholas was alarmed for his life. But finding that he began to recover, he withdrew, after signifying by a gesture to the young lady that he had something important to communicate, and would wait for her outside the room. He could hear that the sick man came gradually, but slowly, to himself, and that without any reference to what had just occurred, as though he had no distinct recollection of it as yet, he requested to be left alone. Oh! Apostrophe apostrophe, thought Nicholas, that this slender chance might not be lost, and that I might prevail, if it were but for 1 week's time and reconsideration. Apostrophe apostrophe, you are charged with some commission to me, sir, apostrophe said Madeline, presenting herself in great agitation. Do not press it now, I beg and pray you. The day after tomorrow. Come here then. Apostrophe, it will be too late for what I have to say, apostrophe rejoined Nicholas, and you will not be here. Oh, madam, if you have but one thought of him who sent me here, but one last lingering care for your own peace of mind and heart, I do for God's sake urge you to give me a hearing. Apostrophe, she attempted to pass him, but Nicholas gently detained her. A hearing, apostrophe said Nicholas. I ask you, but to hear me. Not me alone, but him for whom I speak, who is far away, and does not know your danger. In the name of heaven hear me. Apostrophe, the poor attendant, with her eyes swollen and red with weeping, stood by, and to her Nicholas appealed in such passionate terms, that she opened a side door, and, supporting her mistress into an adjoining room, beckoned Nicholas to follow them. Leave me, sir. Pray, apostrophe said the young lady. I cannot, will not leave you thus, apostrophe returned Nicholas. I have a duty to discharge, and, either here, or in the room from which we have just now come, at whatever risk or hazard to Mr. Bray, I must beseech you to contemplate again the fearful course to which you have been impelled. Apostrophe, what course is this you speak of, and impelled by whom, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe demanded the young lady, with an effort to speak proudly. I speak of this marriage, apostrophe returned Nicholas, of this marriage, fixed for tomorrow, by one who never faltered in a bad purpose, or lent his aid to any good design, of this marriage, the history of which is known to me, better, far better, than it is to you. I know what web is wound about you. I know what men they are from whom these schemes have come. You are betrayed and sold for money, for gold, whose every coin is rusted with tears, if not red with the blood of ruined men, who have fallen desperately by their own mad hands. Apostrophe, you say you have a duty to discharge, apostrophe said Madeline, and so have I. And with the help of heaven I will perform it. Apostrophe, say rather with the help of devils, apostrophe replied Nicholas, with the help of men, one of them your destined husband, who are apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.